Valley with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. Episode 1, Season 12. Who'd have thought it? We got there. We got there to our next season. It is good to be back. We've had a couple of weeks off. I hope you've enjoyed a couple of weeks off. Hope you've caught up on all the old episodes. If you haven't, they're all still there. We keep them all there for you. Some of them are a little bit kind of news-centric. I get it, but there's some great, great features as well and some interesting pieces with various drivers of past and present that you can go and seek out. If you are new, welcome to the family. Keep spreading the word. Keep spreading the love. Normally at this point in the podcast, I normally say on my right, hello, Ryan Champion, but he's not there. DJ Ryan Champion is busy in Ibiza at the moment, if you follow him on Twitter. So I'll say hello, smack bang right in the middle, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson. Sorry to the listeners that it's just me this week.
It's just me and you. It's not just you. Otherwise, I'm going to go really, really quiet.
You're not the guest, though. You're the linchpin that holds it all together. You're the absolute rally glue.
The absolute rally glue. I've been called absolute many things, but probably not glue. Over the years, but still, there you go.
It was meant with affection.
I know it was meant with affection. Have you enjoyed your 2 weeks off, Jack?
Yeah, I have. I've been very busy at work, but I've enjoyed. I did actually get to a rally in that time, which I'm sure we'll talk about later.
We're going to talk about that. Let's do things in some kind of order. Now, it is Rally Argentina this coming weekend. We're going to preview it in the sense of, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about some of the things that are coming up. We'll talk about some of the runners and riders, of course, for Rally Argentina. But I am really, really excited about Rally Argentina, Jack Bennion. Do you want to tell you why? I'll tell you why then, Jack.
Go for it.
Oh, that's what I'm going to do. Dead air, by the way. It doesn't sound great.
I absolutely didn't mute my microphone there. That was not what happened at all.
Okay, I thought you were just giving me the dead air. It's the only round of WRC that Sebastian Ogier hasn't won, Jack Bennion.
That's interesting. I'm very much not looking forward to Rally Argentina in one way, Tony. Would you like me to tell you why?
You tell me why.
Because the 2016 winner's missing. Hayden Paddon.
I know.
Why is he not doing it?
I guess we all know, obviously, there was politics, obviously, for the second car. The third car is being shared between him and Danny Sordo. It does seem like an odd one if you had a former winner in your midst that you could put him in the car, but obviously the events were split and Hayden is doing is it Rally Wihagi, I think it is, which is the opening round of APRC in his AP4 car this weekend.
Well, he won't be bored then, will he?
No, he'll be a busy boy. And he's keeping himself match fit. Obviously, he's got his program that he runs down there, and obviously with Hyundai and everything else. But I agree with you. Hayden is somebody that I think I think we're desperately missing from the championship. And I think there's an element that the longer that some of these drivers are away, and we're going to talk about Craig Breen in a second, the longer these drivers are away from the WRC, I think it hinders, not help the career by a million miles. I really believe that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the events change, don't they, each year, but a lot of them stay the same, and keeping notes for different parts of the stage and stuff's really important for these drivers when they come back for the following year. So not only has Hayden missed an opportunity to stay match fit for this season, but he's also missed an opportunity to have some notes for some of the stages for next season potentially. So it's kind of a double-edged sword of negativity really for a driver missing a WRC event. And you know, it's very important that you get out to these kind of difficult events like Argentina to do. So yeah, it's not great for Hayden, but has won the event and is obviously has done well on the event before, so hopefully, you know, you can come back next year with a bit more of a substantial deal, we'll hope.
I hope so. Now, just while I think on this, is great, because people who listen to this, by the way, Jack, do you ever have anybody come up to you, and I'm not doing this as some kind of pat on the back for the podcast, but has anybody actually randomly engaged you about doing this podcast?
Yeah, quite often.
Okay, cool. Right, I've had four people, three of which I've never met, and two of them I met on Rally Nuts stages, and it was lovely to speak to you. And it was nice to hear the positive feedback. But I had a former guest drop me a message who listens, and it's all very apt because it's Seb Marshall, who co-drives for Hayden Paddon, as it happens. And Seb's been listening, and he's been liking the coaching bit, and he's asked me about maybe putting all the coaching pieces together with Trevor as one big podcast. And that was very, I thought, that's very nice. It's quite nice when you get somebody message you like that, who obviously is at the higher echelons of our sport, who listens to the podcast and gives us a podcast suggestion.
Definitely. Seb's a really cool guy and someone who, you know, no matter what you might think about his sort of his standing in the sport now, he's moved up to the WRC level. He's always talking about what's going on in the British Rally Championship, what's going on in the BTRDA. He wants to know what's happening at the grassroots level of the sport, which is really nice to have people like that. And that kind of enthusiasm is infectious.
I think so. Now, I wanted to talk about a driver that is coming back who has been benched, to use the term, Craig Breen. After, you know, a fantastic start to the season, obviously well documented now. Obviously, Sebastian Loeb came back and everything else, but he's focused. He's back. He's. You know, we spoke to him just as he was messing about with his go kart last time he was on the podcast, and you know, we were talking about the downtime, what he was going to be doing with it. He's now back for Rally Argentina, and the Citroën boys seem happier. There was an interesting press conference which has been shared around with the Citroën drivers and also the team management and stuff with regards to the changes to the car, Jack Bengen.
Yeah, it seems like they seem to be making a bit of a breakthrough, doesn't it? They seem to be night and day different where they are now compared to where they were last year. It's good to see Craig back in the car, and you know, I think we've done it to death, the debate of whether Craig should have been in or out of the car to start with, and I don't think we need to touch on that too much now. I think what Craig has done is signalled a bit of intent now that he wants to come back and make an impression. So I think, you know, looking at the entry list, it's fair to say you probably got, you know, 11 different people who could win this rally, and I think Craig being as sort of committed as he has been in what he said in MN this week, I think it's fair to say that he's ready to come back and really challenge for victory on this event, and challenge for victory on every event that he does for the rest of the year. I think that, you know, his plan this year was to either be fighting for wins or get into a position where he's learning enough about the event so that he can challenge for the win next year. And I think he'll be doing that on most of the events this year. And, you know, only time will tell as to whether Sweden was a bit of a flash in the pan or whether he can back that up now with future results like that as well.
We've got Mads Osberg coming up a little bit later on with our guest, I don't know if they call him a guest presenter or guest roving reporter, but Gary Boyd, of course, who normally does the facts and Gary's facts and everything else. We haven't got any for you this week, but what we have got, we've got a fantastic piece that Gary recorded with Mads Osberg. Mads coming back into the Citroën fold, Jack, for a couple of events as well.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on, isn't it? I think he's always one of them people who, on certain events, he's always very quick, and it's really a cop out, isn't it, to say that people are unlucky? But sometimes it feels like, I don't know if you or the absolute rally listeners agree, but sometimes Mads just seems to be hamstrung with really bad luck. But it's good to see him back in the car. I think he'll be in for Sardinia as well as the other event. So good to see him back. He's a real personality, isn't he? And someone who's, you know, he's always nice to hear at the end of a stage and see how he gets on. He's very impressive on his debut in the car as well, really, I think, given circumstances of not having a test and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think, you know, Mads on his day can be very quick, and, you know, sometimes he gets written off a little bit too easily, in my opinion, but it depends on the event that he's doing. And Argentina will, you know, that'll be an interesting one to see how he gets on there.
I tell you what was interesting, and I have obviously for the interest of doing edits and stuff like that, with the piece we've got with Mads talks about the handling and some of the tweaks and stuff that have happened with Citroën. So I'll be interested to get his take on the Citroën coming up. Jack Bengen, we did do something on the last episode of Absolute Rally, which I think was before Corsica. You and Ryan both went for Thierry Neuville. I went for Sebastian Ogier.
Well, you just win saying. In this case.
Just saying. Just thought I'd put it out there.
Props to you, Tony Simpson. You are this week, you are the greatest WRC predictor.
Well, you know what? At least I predicted one and got one right, because normally, as we've all said, it is like kind of the kiss of death for when we predict somebody to win around the WRC.
It's only a matter of time before the team start writing in and asking us not to predict anymore.
Yeah, I think it's coming. Are we gonna dare to do something for Rally Argentina, Jack Bengen?
Ooh, are we gonna dare to do something for Rally Argentina? Yeah, why not? Let's do it.
Okay. Are you going to go, or am I going to go?
I can go first if you like.
Go on, you go first.
Don't give me much time to think about this. I bet you've been thinking about this all week and then spring it on Jack Bengen and give him 2 seconds to think about who he's going to pick for the winner.
Go on.
I'm going to go Elvin Evans.
Elvin Evans, wow.
He lost it by 7/10 in a bridge last year. So Fingers crossed with Dan Barrett back in the car. He's gonna be there or thereabouts.
Well, do you know what? You've just reminded me. I wanted to come to that. I was welcome back, Dan Barrett. What a performance! Obviously, we've not been on since Corsica. There was two things that happened while I was watching the coverage, and obviously on WRC Live, you get to see lots of bits and pieces. Obviously, regroup and things like that, which normally used to happen on the radio, but it was. Equally brilliant and kind of weird to see and hear Phil Mills, not only on the in-car footage, which was great, but also at regroup when kind of doing interview pieces and stuff like that, because Phil's always a little bit mischievous, I think it's fair to say, and I've kind of worked with Phil over the last few years, so it felt a little bit odd to see him back in his plain black overalls, like he kind of... like it's some kind of weird imposter because he didn't have his works overalls on. He just had plain black overalls, and I must admit, it was just a bit weird. It was just a bit weird, but in a good way, Jack.
Yeah, definitely. Nice seeing back. Someone who has a lot of history on that event, whether it be winning or steering Petter Solberg or trying to keep him out of trouble, which didn't always happen in Corsica, as we all know. But I think he was happy to be back, but I think that's, you know, I don't think we'll see too much more of Phil in terms of WRC future. I think that's very much a sort of one-off for him, and it looked like he enjoyed it from what he was saying at the end, which is the main thing, and something that, you know, at that level is quite hard to do. You know, we all get into rallying because we enjoy it, but when you actually get to a level that they're at, you know, sometimes it is difficult to enjoy, and especially when you're choking out page notes in Corsica and you've got 8,000 pages of notes, it seems like, for some of those guys. So yeah, it seemed like he enjoyed it, which is the main thing.
Now, coming back is a very apt term. We've just talked about Phil Mills coming back while we've been off on our little sabbatical for 2 weeks. Ken Block's announced his programme, Jack Bengen.
I don't care about his programme.
You don't care? No?
Because I'm far too interested in this Escort Cosworth he's piling around America in.
I know. Brilliant. I know. Well, funny enough, we're going to have Alex Gelsimo is going to be joining us in the next couple of weeks.
He's a really, really nice guy.
Yeah, I know. He's ace. I got to know Alex a little bit when he was doing BRC with Gus Greensmith, funny enough.
Right.
And I've been kind of kept in contact with Alex and just messages back and forth and stuff. And then when this was announced, I thought, I've got to talk to him. And on the back of some of the stuff we're doing with Trev, he also does some co-driver coaching courses as well. So we're going to be talking about that. There's a bit of a feature. But yes, I'm kind of the same as you. I've still got the Tamiya remote control car of the Escort Cosworth. I've still got that car in the Michelin Pilot cars.
I can give you the serious answer now, if you like.
Yes, go on then.
Yeah, so Ken Block's obviously, as everyone's probably seen now, is doing Rally Spain in the 2018 Fiesta. So that's going to be... how interesting that's going to be to see where he's at, because Spain's always an event he's really enjoyed, so it's going to be interesting to see where he's at here. But just one more thing on the Escort Cosworth.
Yeah,
there's not many cars as synonymous as a Group A Cosworth that you can put a new livery on and make it look as cool as the car in period, and I think he's actually managed to do that with the livery that he's put on it.
Yeah, but I've not really thought about it like that. I've not really thought, because obviously the thing is, your people tend to always return to kind of what they were, to kind of return to that period spec. You know, not many people kind of move forward and do something fresh and new, and obviously that's what he's done. I've watched some of the onboards, albeit very briefly, and I don't think it's... I think it's... While it's period, I think it's got some modern-y bits. I think it's got a sequential in it, if memory serves, from the onboards. So it hasn't got the old 7-speed dog box or whatever it was that was in it, which was a perennial pain. I think when people ran them, I think they always ended up changing them in the end. But yeah, it was great to see. And obviously, you know, it was a very... I'll be honest with you, I thought it was a little bit of genius on both Ken's side and also... You know, full performance over in the States. Obviously, Subaru are dominant over there at the moment. With David, who picked up is basically won by 6 minutes. I think it's the seventh successive win in 8 starts on that particular event. But anyway, so you've got Subaru, Chris Atkinson coming over there now in the second car, and I think that's possibly going to be shared. I don't know whether Peggy's going to do some rounds as well. But anyway, by the by, Ken coming back in a Fiesta would have just been Ken coming back in a Fiesta, and it would have been great. Ken coming back in something a little bit different. And I know they've worked really, really hard to get the regulations to work at the American Rally Association, because I know some of the guys over there, in order to get Ken to be able to run with them as well, because there was something with regards to regulations why perhaps it might not have been able to happen. And the guys at ARA really did kind of pull out all the stops to get Ken back and get that car there. And again, from a marketing point of view, complete stroke of genius, because I think he's probably got more PR on the back of running that car than he would have done of just running a Fiesta again.
Yeah, definitely. And do you know what? I wish Ryan Champion was here at this point, because it's just flicked into my memory a quite a good Absolute Rally listener's question. Is that Cosworth the one of the best cars never to win a championship in period? Because I think 94, it was completely hamstrung by the fact that Biazion was a little bit older at that point, and Francois Delacour crashed an F40 on a friend's F40 outside of a rally and was injured for most of the season. But I think that Cosworth would have had a very good chance of winning the championship in Delacour's hands by the look at the early form of that season. So yeah, I think that's a good question. Feel free to put me wrong. Absolutely.
I always have a soft spot for it, and as I say, genuinely, I still have the Tamiya Escort Cosworth in Michelin Pilot colours. Although that said, the Michelin Pilot shell is a little bit battered. But yeah, a massive soft spot for it. Well, massive soft spot.
It's a long time since I've read Centurion Rally. I've got to admit, and a long time since I've thought about it. But there's a very good column by David Evans in this week where he talks a little bit about the Escort Cosworth's pace in the hands of Malcolm Wilson on a British national event, and that'll tell you a little bit about how competitive that car could be, beating a very synonymous rallying Scotsman. Who, go and read that column, because it tells you a little bit about how good that car is.
One last thing, Jack. I managed to get out of predicting who I thought was going to win a rally Argentina rather well, I thought. But story you guys broke last week with regards to the route for Rally GB. There's been some back and forward on this. Obviously, the idea is that they wanted to run the power stage down the Orme or up the Orme, into Llandudno, wherever way kind of like you're looking at it, as a way of finishing. Obviously, it was poo-pooed, not to put too fine a point on it, by the FIA, because obviously the surface wasn't representative of what the rally is. Is there any more on that one, Jack?
Yep, there's a David Evans is in between landing in Argentina and going to another flight to go down to where the rally actually is. He's managed to file a story to Autosport. So when you're reading this, it'll be a little bit sort of out of date, I imagine. But yeah, there's a story gone up this morning, Smoke and Mirrors, which is Wednesday, to say that. Sorry, Tony,
should I have done that? You crack
that
on.
Probably naughty of me, wasn't it? So there's been an agreement found. Basically, after lengthy discussions, the two have agreed on a proposal, and that will be to keep the Orme as the finale with live television coverage, but the power stage points will be offered for the stage earlier. So that was basically what Autosport reported a little bit earlier this week, or maybe the end of last week, the plan there. So yeah, basically confirming that's the case.
There you go. Okay. A couple of other bits and pieces. Chile moves closer to WRC events after successful pilot rally. Who are we going to lose, Jack, if Chile comes in?
That's the kind of one thing missing from the story, isn't it? I'm not too sure. I'm guessing it'll be Mexico or Argentina, because it kind of singles out the fact that there's two events. So
logistically it's South America. So if they kind of slotted it into one of those slots from a logistics point of view for the teams, obviously something I know a little bit about, you could link them together the way logistics are linked together for Mexico and Argentina. So maybe that's why it's being thought about. I can understand them wanting to go this particular route. I would truly love to find out whether the enthusiasm from both sides and the public, I suppose, how possible is it to see America back in the calendar? I wonder how close we could be to that.
It's interesting, isn't it? If you take the word in directly from David Evans' article, just this once, I'll read a little bit of MN to you. even though, you know, you don't have to go and buy it, I'm going to read you this sentence just for you guys. Don't be too excited. So it says, the WRC promoter and FIA officials were on the Pacific side of the Andes to observe what's looking increasingly likely to be the WRC's second South America outing of the year. So if you take that on, in terms of chronological order, then it would be Argentina missing out, wouldn't it? Because Mexico's the first event. So although neither of those two events are mentioned in the story, David Evans' wording would imply that maybe it's Argentina that's that could be getting the call. So it's going to be interesting to see how that story develops. And Chile's not really a country I've thought much about in terms of rallying.
No, but, me neither. You know, it's
I don't know much about the roads, but I'd never write it off without knowing a little bit more about it. So hopefully we get some more information from this candidate event and we can learn a little bit about more what Chile are bringing to the table.
I tell you what's kind of prompted me to think about it a little bit over in the States. I know we've got listeners over in the States, and Mike Shaw does a fantastic thing with Open Paddock over there, and you'll get involved with our podcast as well. And I'm sure he would have an opinion on this as well. But if I can just take us kind of by the hand and take his roundy just for a split second, Jack. Yes, I am taking his roundy. Some interesting things that have happened over in the States over the last kind of 5 or 6 weeks. And it's Rallycross. Now, Global Rallycross is kind of stood on its own 2 feet for the last number of years, and it's had teams like Volkswagen in their Hyundai, Ford had cars in there run by Chip Ganassi and people like that, you know, basically very, very strong teams that have got a racing pedigree in NASCAR or Indy and things like that. So it's gone on about its own business, very much so, hasn't been troubled by World Rallycross in any way, shape or form. Then all of a sudden, World Rallycross kind of started to get involved a little bit over there, and they were obviously had an event over there, and they've also announced this year that there's going to be an IMG, which of course is the promoter behind World Rallycross, are going to have an American championship as well. This kind of comes in tandem with the fact that Global Rallycross announced that they were going to go RX2s, and basically the supercar were not going to be part of their championship, which is a little bit of a grey area. And I'm going to be very, very careful where I go next to this, because I think there's a lot of litigation going on. But basically, Global Rallycross now is gone into receivership, and the calendar's been cancelled, and there's a lot going on. People owe money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The reason why I'm explaining this backstory is that IMG have gone about it in such a way, they were trying to offer up a rival championship or whatever, but they're now there, and Global are not there. So, you know, Rallycross in America will be an IMG-led championship. I just wonder if the promoter behind WRC went down a similar route. I'm not talking about ousting any kind of championship over in America, but I've taken an event over to America, just how much passion and how much drive there would be. And you think about people like Ken Block and obviously Ford Performance and obviously Subaru America, which is obviously run by the Vermont sports car team. You know, just how much passion there would be to get the championship to go there, Jack. I just think there's so many roads and there's so many options, and is it big enough? Is WRC big enough? Because, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, we wouldn't have thought Rallycross would have been big enough.
I think it comes down to the manufacturers at the end of the day, in my opinion. It always kind of relates back to either the money or where the money comes from. And for me, WRC, if the manufacturers agree that America is a market that they want to target, then we'll end up going to America. I think it's just, not to be too blunt about things, but that's kind of how things are decided, isn't it? We're never going to go to an event that none of the manufacturers want to go to or don't see as valuable. So if we are going to go back to America, I think it's key that the manufacturers involved in the WRC see that as a key market. Ford coming back a little bit more into M Sport is a good thing for that. But we're still not at a works Ford team yet, are we, in terms of M Sport? Whether the manufacturers are interested in America, I'd have to do a little bit more reading to find out where they want to be, really. But yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? And I think there's always that trade-off between us as rally fans wanting to go to the best places and making it making it work for the manufacturers as well. So it's an interesting one to look out for the future. But Chile, in what I've just said, I wouldn't have thought any of the major manufacturers in the WRC are particularly interested in Chile, but there must be some sort of motivation for going there. So, yeah, it's, there's all sorts that goes on behind the WRC and its calendar choices, and I think sometimes it's a little bit difficult to delve to what it's actually trying to achieve in that sense.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Anyway, watch this space, folks. Watch this space. But it's I suppose it's nice to see that there's passion from other parts of the world to take WRC there. Who knows? Who knows? Jack, new events. Leads us on quite nicely. Do you see what I did there? I'm slick. What can I say? I'm slick.
I suppose it was a
record breaking in many ways because it's not happened before. So is it fair to say record breaking? I'm not sure, not entirely sure, but certainly the first, hopefully, of many, Jack. First closed road event in England.
Yeah, I went. It was last weekend. It was very enjoyable. There was some legislation that happened in the government in England last year that made it easier for closed road motorsport to happen in the UK. We talked about it a little bit before on the podcast. The first event to actually have a crack at it was the Rally Tendring in Clacton, or the Corbo Seats Rally, as the sponsor dictates. And that happens in the Tendring Peninsula, which is about 70, 80 miles northeast of London. And it was a fantastic first event. I think there was a lot of unknown about it, really. It was the first event, so no one really knew what was going to happen. But there was a team of about 500 organisers and marshals and volunteers and stuff like that from the Cheltenham Motor Club, and they did a fantastic job. It was never going to be easy to pull together that many organisers and put on a proper closed road event for the first time. There was a little bit of complaint in the build up from some residents and things like that who were trying to cause a little bit of trouble, but they didn't really seem to appear across the course of the event. And the competitors reported people out in their gardens watching and out in pubs watching and lining the road sections. In fact, I think the common view from the competitors was it was more people out on the road sections than were actually on the stages. So a little bit to work on, but they didn't want to bite off more than they could chew in the first year, which I thought was a very sensible approach. What they did do, they did very well. And what they do want to do in the future that they've been talking about is very sensible as well. So it's going to be great to see how the event moves forward. There's a little bit in MN about a date for next year. So it looks like things could be going ahead next year with a little bit of talking to the council and stuff like that. But yeah, it was a brilliant, brilliant first run at an event, and can't sort of give enough praise to the club, the Chelmsford Motor Club, that run the event. And also, I think we're very quick to criticise the MSA, the sports governing body in this country, but they worked tirelessly for many years to push through this original legislation, and they should be credited for their role in it too. So all around, as a journalist, you're always kind of looking for a little bit of controversy, but at the weekend I was disappointed because everything went perfectly.
Which was great. And you know, I think we all kind of held our breath a little bit, Jack. I think it's fair to say we all needed it to work. We all wanted it to work. And, you know, it was nice to see David Richards there, of course, who's the now, I suppose he's the boss, isn't he? He's the boss of the MSA chairman.
The chairman.
I prefer the boss, to be honest with you. There, you know, looking at what was going on, the weather always helps those types of events, and especially on the seafront and things like that.
Being by the sea,
it adds a vibe. And I had massive concerns before the weekend, and I genuinely was watching kind of social media and stuff and just thinking, please, you know, let's keep this clean, folks. Let's get this one home. And so pleased. Everybody who went down there, I've not heard one kind of negative thing from anybody, which was brilliant. There was some, as you say, there were some whispers and there were some concerns from the locals, but hopefully it's been alleviated. And you know, people seeing the value of it, I'm sure it brought a lot of money to the area, which they've probably not seen before. A massive spike in the local economy over that kind of 72-hour period that probably will help people be convinced that it was the right way to go. And hopefully, you know, the format that's been done there, you know, maybe that blueprint is the blueprint that can be rolled out in other parts of the world, Jack, or certainly other parts of the UK anyway.
It's key. It's key, I think. You know, we're living in a period where rallying isn't at the forefront of the, you know, like your Fleet Street newspapers, like your McRae and Burns and that sort of thing. We're living in a period where rallying's kind of in the minority when it comes to motorsport. I think one of the ways to get around that is to stop expecting people to stroll into a forest at 7 o'clock in the morning, and give them something that they can go out and watch in their front garden. You know, I spoke to more people who didn't know what rallying was over the weekend than people who did. And that in itself should tell you what kind of reach the event had. And a lot of the spectators didn't really have a clue what was going on, but they experienced rallying for the first time. And now we've opened it up to them, maybe they will go into a forest at 7 o'clock in the morning and go and find an event close to them. So, you know, I think it's really key for motorsport in the future, not just in rallying, but in general, that it gets out to the people as much as people get to it, if that makes sense. And I think this is a really massive step. If we can have two or three more events like this around the country, I think it'll be a massive step for rallying and really help to encourage A, people to come out and watch, and B, people to come and compete as well.
Couldn't have put it better myself, Jack Benyon. Do you have any other business this week?
Well, that was kind of my only other business, to be honest.
Well, that's all right. That's all right. Well, yeah. Listen, my only other business, we've kind of already mentioned as well. I make notes as we go, and we mentioned it before. My only other business was just a simple welcome back, Dan Barrett. Just great to see him back in a car, and great to see him back with Elvin. And, just, again, a very, very similar veins, I suppose, to Seb Marshall, possibly one of the most hardworking. I know they call him a young man, and that sound makes him sound really young. He's not. He's been around forever.
It makes me sound old.
But yeah, I always say this. Obviously, I did. Yeah, we did one make championships and stuff with Dan and I back in the day. He never sat with me. Sat with far quicker drivers than me. But he's been around a long time and he's earned his stripes. And I must admit, I was so gutted for him. Obviously, getting the big call. Obviously, again to in the first team, so to speak, this year with Elvin. I just hope that it was only one event. It has only been one event. So welcome back to the WRC, Dan Barrett. Jack Benyon, we will be back at full strength next week. It'll be me, myself, and I, and you, and Ryan Champion. So,
yeah, I did have a little reserve.
Do you want to do it?
Any other business?
Do you want me to do that, Jack?
Well, we're going to talk about the Pirelli a lot later with Frederick, aren't we? But I thought it'd be good to kind of outline a couple of the key runners from this weekend's British Rally Championship.
Of course, I keep forgetting that. We have already done the bit with Frederick, so that's what's confusing me. We didn't really talk about the Pirelli. So, yeah, please, Jack Benyon, take us through the runners and riders, of course, for the opening round of the MSA Prestone British Rally Championship.
Yeah, so we're up in Carlisle for the Pirelli. Obviously, the Border Counties Rally was cancelled due to weather, so we're starting at the slightly odd opener of the Pirelli International, welcome as it may be. Keith Cronin's first car on the road, and he's going to be back for attempting to win a fifth British title, which would tie Jimmy McRae, who has, at the minute, the most on five. And that is Keith's opportunity to do it in five different cars as well, which would be unprecedented, as he's back with a Hyundai, which can be interesting to see how he gets on. He's on Michelin tyres. And then we've got David Bogie second on the road, who was very, very good on gravel last year in the BRC for the first couple of rounds. He's back in his Skoda that he knows very well, and he's on D-Max. And then we've got Marty McCormack in a Skoda Fabia R5. He's third on the road. And Matt Edwards, who finished third in the BRC last year, and he's on Pirellis this year instead of Hankooks. So it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on. And then rounding out the top five is Rhys Yates, who did the Azores Rally earlier in the year. He switched to Skoda Fabia R5, and he's on Michelin's, so he should be one to watch for the event as well. And in other news, in the R2 category for the Prestone Motorsport News Junior British Rally Championship, we've got Oscar Solberg back. Wasn't quite sure up until sort of last week whether Oscar was going to come back or not, but he is. He's coming back with a Ford Fiesta R2T, and he'll be up against William Crichton, who finished second in the championship last year. And last year's champion, Callum Devine, who's moved on to the Junior World Rally Championship, is coming to do the event for a little bit of practice before Rally Portugal, where he'll pick up his JWRC campaign again. So it's going to be a good battle in that championship as well.
Very nicely put together, Jack Benyon. As I say, we are going to be talking more about the Pirelli Rally a little bit further on the podcast. We're going to, forgive me, again, the smoke and mirrors. The piece we did with Frederick Arlen is coming up a little bit later on. We are going to go to a break. After the break, we're going to come back with, as I say, Gary Boyd, friend of the show, who was out on the historic rally over in New Zealand. And they have Mads Osberg over there. Hayden Padden, I think, did it as well. But anyway, I'm not going to tell you too much about it. But Gary Boyd does a fantastic little piece with Mads Osberg. So, after this break, we're going to come out with Mads Osberg. That'll be with Gary Boyd. And then after that, we'll be back with Frederick Arling.
You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter at @Absolute_Rally.
Hi, Mads. First of all, just like to say on behalf of the rally fans, welcome to New Zealand. Hope you've enjoyed the first few days of your stay here.
I have, absolutely. It's been amazing so far. And luckily, I had some time for some holiday and also trying to find Padden. So it's been some interesting days.
Have you found him yet?
I did find him today. It was amazing.
Yeah, fantastic. Your wife, your son have been enjoying the time here?
Yeah, absolutely. We have had some really nice family time. We had some advice by John Kennard about where to go, and we stayed a few nights here and there around the South Island, and it's been really, really amazing just driving around, seeing the mountains, the lakes, some beaches, and it's been absolutely fantastic. So we have really enjoyed the time here.
How have you found the New Zealand scenery compared to back home in Norway?
It's surprisingly similar, especially the, let's say, the lake and mountain district around the center of the island. It's very similar to the fjords back in Norway. But it's very, very nice, extremely friendly people and nice food, and we've just really enjoyed the time. So we realize we are not in Norway, even though it looks a bit similar.
Okay. Now, I understand you've driven a two-wheel drive car before, you've driven rear-wheel drive before, but not rear-wheel drive on gravel. Is that correct?
Well, it's half correct. I did some, let's say, junior rallies in Sweden when I was 16 with a Volvo, and a few of those rallies were on gravel, so I do have some experience with rear-wheel drive. It was a completely original Volvo, so a little bit different than what I'm doing now, but I do have some experience with the rear-wheel
drive. How many years ago was that?
Well, it was 2004, so yeah, it's a long time ago.
So how have you found the test drives that you've done? You did a few passes today with some media and sponsors at the Shakedown.
Yeah, it's a really amazing feeling with the car. I haven't really tried it on proper conditions yet. I had a small Shakedown yesterday and a small drive with some sponsors today, and it's been snowing all the time, so it's not really the perfect way of trying the car, but it's been enjoyable anyway.
And we're expecting rain to wash all that snow away. So come the weekend, it's going to be different again.
I hope so, yeah. We have been wrecking the Sunday stages of the event today, and it's completely snow-free anyway. So it's muddy and wet, but that's better than snow.
Of the stages you're wrecking today, do they remind you of any stages elsewhere in the world?
Well, we did the two last stages we did, it must have been 16 and 17, reminds me a lot about Argentina. It was very similar to some of the stages we do on the WRC event in Argentina, which is crazy because it's as far away as you can get from here.
Sure.
So, but it reminds me a lot about that, and I expected maybe the stages to remind me more about Finland, because I've seen some pictures about fast roads and crests, and I was thinking Finland. But
tomorrow you'll recce the Saturday stages, and then you'll see the ones that are like Finland, the roller coasters.
Yeah.
Curry Bush will be the one Aidan and John probably told you all about.
Everyone is talking about it.
I'm going to make a prediction for you here.
Yeah.
If I read it right, you love the super fast stuff. The first half of stage four, when you get in there, it's open, fast. You're going to be smiling ear to ear. I'll try and catch up with you after the rally and find out if I'm right or not.
Yeah.
Okay. Looking at this current season, so far you've only done Sweden. Hayden's only done Sweden. I know Hayden's got another six rallies coming up. The world knows Hayden's got another six rallies coming up. But you're trying to negotiate a few more drives for the year. You're taking time out to come to New Zealand. Can you afford to take time out of the negotiations?
Yeah, well, I can. I think we've sort of agreed on something now, and at the point when I said yes to this, I knew for sure I was not doing Košica, so I could take the time to travel here, and it's looking a lot brighter now than it did just a couple of months ago, but we will see. I think it will be quite a decent season at the end.
Look forward to getting some details there in time. Something we see this year is we've only got, I think, 8 drivers doing a full-time season, but we're seeing multiple drivers, yourself included, who only have a part season. Do you think this is going to be the way of the future for WRC?
I don't know. I think especially when you have 3 cars per team who can take the points, you can sort of have 2 standard drivers and then bring in some kind of specialists in the 3rd car for some of the events. And yeah, it might look like that's the way it's going now, but hopefully it will change to be able to run 3 cars with 3 drivers in each team will be good, like you see with Toyota. They have the same lineup and it's giving consistency for the drivers, which is really good.
And when we look at the points table, the 3 Toyota drivers are up in the top 5 at the moment.
Yeah. So it needs to be like that. It's difficult with jumping in and out, and like myself and Hayden as well, you get some months off. It's a bit hard to get back, so you need to keep yourself busy.
So how do you keep your seat fitness up?
Well, for the moment it's been quite quiet since Sweden. I haven't done a lot, so it doesn't feel so good, but this rally will be the first of many coming up now, and I will take this seat time as good practice as well to get back up to speed.
Well, entries haven't quite closed for Portugal yet. Hopefully we might see you on that list. Time will tell. Okay. Something else I wanted to explore, Mads. You're out here, you've got Mons, your one-year-old son with you. How are you finding life as a dad? What's the best part of it? What's the most challenging?
Yeah, it feels unreal, to be honest. I love it a lot. It's been... I mean, at this time now, when I've been out of the car for a couple of months, normally it would kill me, but the positive is that I get a lot of time together with my family, which I really enjoy, and to be able to have so much time together with Mons as well, it's been incredible. So, I enjoy being a dad for sure, but I do miss rallying a lot as well, so it's a difficult way of combining. But I'm happy for the time I've had with Mons recently. I really enjoy being a dad, and I hope now I will get some time on the rallies as well.
Those young years are very special years.
They are, yeah.
This is, I believe, your first taste of classic rallying.
Yeah, I think so. I've never done a classic event before, so it's my first time in old cars. Yeah.
Well, some drivers we know, Peter Solberg, Mikko Hirvonen, we know that they've got a real passion for the classics. Could you see that for yourself in the future?
I don't know, maybe, but...
Too far away.
Yeah, I hope it's too far away for the moment. I'm happy to do this rally, and I mean... I love rallying, so as soon as I can go on a closed road in a car with a roll cage, I don't bother what kind of car it is, as long as it's driving. And I probably don't have a more passion about classic cars than any other car, but I have a lot of passion of rally cars.
Is there any car that's really special in your heart, all the cars you've driven over the years?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I do have a big place in my heart for Subarus. It's where I started my career, and I still turn around when I hear the Boxer engine and I see a Subaru. It's lovely cars, and I do enjoy, of course, the modern WRC cars are incredible, much faster and much more enjoyable to drive, but some cars, they just stick with you, and Subaru was a big part of where I am today, so I really have a high passion for Subarus.
And in New Zealand, that's going to go down really well, with Possum Bourne, one of our legendary drivers, being a Subaru driver for life.
Yeah.
You're one of the few drivers who's driven two different current generation WRC cars. What are the differences that you see between them?
Well, what's similar? It's quite a big difference. I mean, obviously you see the races and the stage times are just incredibly close, but when you drive the two different cars, it's a massive difference between them. I mean, I do enjoy both cars. Ford has a reputation of being easy drive, very forgiving car, but anyone can jump in and be fast in the Fiesta, and I still believe that's the case, to be honest. It's an easy car. The Citroen is harder, it's more difficult to drive, but you do have a good edge to it where you can really feel the benefit of the chassis, and you can take more benefit of the engine power, which seems to be a little bit stronger. I remember 2014 and 15 when I came to Citroen that everyone told me it's a big difference and it was difficult to drive, and for sure it was, but I really enjoyed the time with the Citroen. And being away now for Citroen for a couple of years, coming back again for Sweden, and I could still recognize some of the old feeling with the Citroen.
So from the previous generation to the new generation, there are similarities?
They are, absolutely, and I do enjoy that difficult part of the Citroen. It makes it, of course, less forgiving and a bit more on the edge, but when you are able to take the benefit of the strong parts of the chassis and the engine power, it's a fantastic car to drive.
Find that sweet spot, get the results.
Exactly.
Okay. Mads, I know you've got a commitment with a special guest dinner this evening, so I won't take up any more of your time. Wish you a fantastic rally this weekend. Look forward to seeing your successes out there, and we hope to see you in New Zealand again one day.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter at @Absolute_Rally.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Absolute Rally. And at this point, we thought we'd talk a little bit about the Pirelli Rally, of course, the opening round of the Prestone MSA British Rally Championship this year. And normally, we'd obviously have Ryan, who's won it once. And we thought, that's not good enough. We'll get somebody who's won it twice. Frederick Arling, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thank you very much. Nice to be back.
It is. It's good to have you back on. Now, we're going to talk about your season, but it is the opening round of the MSA British Rally Championship. Of course, a championship which you've done for the last few years. You're not doing it this year, but it's the rally that you must be desperate to do because you've won it the last 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we have two wins, and I've actually looked into it now, and I think I'm on the same stats, so to speak, as Colin McRae and Mark Higgins, I think, as well, and some other really, really good drivers. So it would be nice to try and go back and snatch a third to be ahead of these guys for once anyway. So we will see in the future. Maybe I will be back. Would be nice.
Frederick, tell us a little bit about the stages on the Pirelli, because obviously you came to the British Rally Championship in 2016 for the first time, having not done so much in the UK. So tell us a little bit about the nature of the Pirelli and what the stages are actually like.
Well, I must say, okay, first of all, the characteristics is very fast and flowing. Not in the way maybe I'm used to from back home, where it's more like, let's say, a lot of corners, but still quite high speed. In the Pirelli, you have a lot of fast sections. But then you come into this man-made, let's say, chicanes to try and bring the average speeds down. So it's quite a lot of, I would say, stop and go. A lot of very fast sections, and then you go down to first gear, slow speed, and then off you go again. So I must say, for me, the braking points is actually the most important thing. Even though if you maybe lift off in one corner, which could have been flat, it's not crucial. But to really nail those braking points into chicanes, I think, is the main key to try and win that rally.
It's as soon as you brought up, Frederick, the whole bogey time thing was when you first came over in 2016, wasn't it? And I remember you getting very angry in the service park, and I think you threw a sandwich somewhere, and that didn't go so well. But tell us a little bit about how you kind of rebound from things like that on a rally, because I find it really interesting, the whole psychology of it. And obviously, you knew you'd gone faster on a stage than somebody else, and yet the time you got wasn't the time that you completed. So how difficult was that, and how did you kind of bounce back from that over the course of the event? Because obviously you did bounce back because you won the rally. So tell us a little bit about the kind of mindset you had in that event.
Yeah, as you say, I mean, it was I never heard anything quite like it before, that you have a bogey time. So it was like one of my sponsors asked me, isn't rallying about going as quick as you can? So when we came to that first service halt, I think we took 7.8 out of Elfin or something, so somewhere close to 7 seconds on the first stage, and I think we lost 8 on the second one. So I thought we were one down, and to find out that we were actually 8 down was a bit of a surprise. But I mean, like everything in rallying, you just need to try and focus on the next stage and try and do your job. And I think it was on the following stage also Elfin punctured. So the whole thing was, of course, not ideal for anyone. I mean, for myself, my lead going into the day two was only 7.2, but in reality should have been closer to 20 seconds. And also for Elfin, I mean, he was trying to fight back and he couldn't because everyone was getting the same time. So just need to try and focus on your job. And we knew already on the night break before the second day that it was actually only two stages which were going to be run. So I didn't have to push. So I tried to actually save my tires on the stages where the bogey time was going to be beaten. So, okay, hope they've solved this problem this year. They already solved it last year. So I'm quite confident it will be a fair rally from start to end.
Yeah, definitely. In terms of your history, Frederick, obviously your family, your mum and dad both works rally drivers. Your granddad works rally driver. There's a lot of history in your family, you know, around rallying. When you sort of look at events in the UK before you came over, was the Pirelli one that was well known in kind of your circles in terms of, you know, the people you speak to about rallying, as a Pirelli event that's well known outside of the UK? Or would you say it's kind of one that you didn't really learn much about until you actually got to the UK?
To be honest, actually, let's say I've heard a lot about the Keener Forest. So the Pirelli name itself, maybe I didn't really connect to the Keener Forest, but I've heard a lot about the Keener Forest where the rally is held. So I knew quite a lot beforehand that it's, you think on the rec it's a very smooth and fast rally, which it is, but it's also a car breaker, which I didn't actually believe before I got there, because for some reason the road is just rock hard. So when you make a cut on a gravel rally, the side wall or whatever you call it of the road would go away a little bit and you will have a soft compression. On the Pirelli, it's such a hard rally on the car. I mean, I think it's the hardest rally for the car on gravel in the UK, in my opinion. So, and also the rally, I think it has two sides of it. I mean, first year in 2016, it was quite wet and damp, so the grip was really high. Last year, it was really, really dry, so road cleaning had a very big effect, which I actually didn't believe beforehand. So I don't know what the situation is this year, but it's a very tricky rally, and I think depending on what surface you have and what conditions, it's going to be a big decide for the outcome of the rally.
I think it's also very unique, Frederick, and you perhaps would put me straight on this one. Obviously, you've rallied in various parts of Europe, but I don't remember seeing many events. Obviously, I've only competed in the UK, but I don't remember visually seeing many events that, apart from Ypres, where you know you can take some massive cuts, where you can actually lose a car in the cut on gravel. I don't believe there's many other rallies where you can literally put a whole car in the cut and kind of almost use that. It's almost like a railroad effect, isn't it? It's almost like ditch hooking, but you can actually ditch hook the entire car.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was also a surprise for me, how much you could cut, but also in my mind, how much you could lose into the cut. I mean, it's really hard to actually decide where should you throw the car in and where should you try and stay on the road. Because as I say, due to the hardness of the edge of the road, I think it's so easy to break the car, and I think if you want to go flat out, you need to as I say ditch hook it. But for sure, there are quite a lot of big risks surrounding that type of driving style.
Very much so. Now, Frederick, you're not with us this year, unfortunately. We've loved watching you here in the UK. You are taking on, it's a bit of a mixed bag, isn't it, for you, really? Because obviously you've done some local events to you. You've done some events in Sweden. Obviously you also did Rally Sweden as well. And you've now got this program, of course, in IRC. Tell our listeners a little bit about your plans for this year.
I mean, this year the goal is to try and do, I think at the moment we're looking into it, doing 5 ERC events. So we're going to skip the next one in Gran Canaria. And then Ypres and Acropolis has nothing to do with this U28 championship. So the next one we're looking into is I think it's called Rally d'Italia Capital, something like this. And yeah, the reason for this is being that ERC is, I think it's a good platform, a good... Same thing why I went to the UK, it's good publicity for a private driver to get their sponsors out and, you know, to get a try and give something back to the sponsors, but also very competitive and also new events. I mean, Azores was a really, really cool experience, but also very difficult. So it's a bit like going to the UK the first time, but a little bit harder.
Okay. Now,
so yeah,
you still got CA1 Sport. You've still got the Skoda R5. You've got a new co-driver as well for this year. Is that, how is that bedding in for you? Because that's something that's perhaps not fully appreciated by a casual fan or somebody who's not sat in a car before. The change of co-driver can be like changing the car almost.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we had a very successful year last year with Torsten, and we really gelled in quickly. I must say, with Joachim, it's working really well. It can be better. And the main issue for me right now is that for the first time in almost 8 years, I have a Swedish co-driver instead of a Norwegian co-driver. So it's a little bit like, I shouldn't step on any toes now, but maybe comparing Scottish accent to, some South London-based guy. So it's a bit different for me to actually hear the notes from Swedish, even though I'm from Sweden. So it's been a bit of a difficult time, to be honest, especially when you have, like, on Azores, a lot of fog, and, you know, there's a lot of other things going on to actually hear Swedish again. But it's getting better and better, and we're working really hard to try and gel in together. So I'm looking really positive on the future.
Can I just ask you, did you have your notes when you had a Norwegian co-driver, did you have your notes in English?
No. I have, like, it's Swedish words, but a lot of information is English. So I would use flat, fast, easy, neat, don't cut, brake, stop, slow. Yeah, lots of English words bedded into the Swedish, so it's a bit of a mixture of everything. I tried to explain this to David Boga one time, and he just laughed at me and said, it makes absolutely no sense. So, yeah, I just leave it there.
I was just about to say, I struggle with left and right, let alone kind of transcending between two languages. I think fair play to you.
Yeah, I must say that the distance, the measurements is the biggest thing. I mean, all the odd numbers, so 30, 50, and 70 is in Norwegian, and all the even numbers, so 40, 60, and 80 is in Swedish. I don't know why it is like this, but that's how it is anyway. So, a bit strange, but it works for me.
I found my head hurting even listening to that, Ben. So, fair play to you, Frederick. How are you keeping yourself match fit? Because the other, I suppose, the kind of downside of doing the Under 28 Championship, of course, in ERC, is that you've got quite some big chunks of downtime. So, how are you keeping match fit?
So, I will go and do the next Swedish Championship round here in Sweden called the South Swedish Rally, which is a quite well-known rally. I think you can compare it to the Pirelli Rally in, let's say, bigness and how people perceive the rally. So it's our biggest gravel rally of the year. So I will do that one. And then we are not really sure, but we're looking into doing some tarmac events in July before Italy. So that's not decided yet, but that's the plan anyway.
Fantastic. Frederick, will you stay in touch? Can we get you back on a bit further into the season so you can tell us how it's going?
Yeah, definitely. Yes, really nice to be back. So, and from my side, let's go see One Sport this weekend. David and Reese, get this one now.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Good man. Listen, Frederick, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter at @Absolute_Rally.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. And we're up to the next bit of the syllabus now of coaching with Trev. Obviously, we've had a couple of weeks off. Trev's managed to recharge his batteries. He's back with us. Hello, Trev.
Hello, Dylan. How are you?
And we're all right. We're all right. Now, obviously, we had Molly on the other week. We spoke more about different sections. This week, we're up to milestones and long-term strategies and stuff like that. So perhaps milestones can be, you know, Molly spoke about them. Milestones can be the kind of tiny baby steps, or they can be huge leaps, I guess.
Yeah, to a point, I suppose. If you've got your long-term goal, then the best way to do it is to break it into sections. So if you've got a five-year goal, for example, you'll break it down to what you want to do in 3 years, what you want to do in a year, 6 months, 3 months, 1 month, a week. And then, as I said to you before, on rallies, what we used to do is break it down into legs of the rally, then stages of the rally, and that's how we do it. And then even, as I said to you, counting down the kilometres that we had still to go. So if something did go wrong, then you were able to work it out what you needed to recover in terms of seconds per kilometre to catch up with the people in front of you. And go on.
No, I was just about to say it's that is the tiny baby steps, because it can be condensed down into a stage, or it can be condensed down into a leg of a rally, or it can be condensed down into a morning of a rally, I guess.
Yeah, and I think what we what you have to do is break it down into manageable steps and stages, where it definitely looks really achievable for you. And I think I've mentioned again once before, where I remember seeing an Olympic swimmer who did it. And when you start to analyze what you need to do, and for example, if you wanted to be a third of a second per mile or per kilometer quicker, and you start to factor that in, a third of a second takes you a third of a second to blink, for example. And over a kilometre, many corners is that, it's roughly 20. Break it down into the corners that you can go a little bit faster on. So forget about the flat-out ones. Forget about the really slow ones, medium corners then. And if you think of what you can do in order to go down that road a blink of an eye faster, you think of all the diet stuff you can do, all the training you can do, all the physical relaxation you can do, clearing your mind, all the extras you can do in the car, the weight saving, etc., etc. You can soon start to see how it won't be that much difficult to carry a little bit extra speed into the medium corners to get that third of a second or a blink of an eye. So it's just it's having something that's achievable is the main thing.
Is that, I guess that's the again, I keep on coming back to this. That is the very beginning of it. You can't do the big stuff until you deal with the little stuff. And the little stuff is, I suppose, is the obvious stuff. You know, you just talked about training and weight saving and things like that. They're all things that, they're all variables that we can control, isn't it? That's the other thing, isn't it? I guess that's important. It's the variables that we can control, because there's so many other variables in rallying that we can't control.
Very much so. Your position on the road, for example, and other things like that. But you can take that into consideration, your preparation as well. And I think one of the areas where a lot of drivers speak to me about is the preparation and the lead up to a rally. So it's not the first time I've heard somebody tell me that on the way to the rally, or when they were at the rally, they thought, you know, if I had a choice here, I'd rather not be here. I'd delay it for another week or another couple of weeks. Usually a lot of that's down to just a little bit of planning that's gone wrong somewhere, that they haven't thought it through properly and made a list. You know, you're talking about Molly. Molly loves a good list, and she's very good at that. You know, if you start off with your goals, and then you've got the interim steps, your milestones, and you write it down, what you want to do. I always quite liked and still do on a Sunday night, is just to review what I've done in the week. And then you update your list or any list you have, and always do something every day if you can. So I go back to the appreciative inquiry. So on your review, what went well this week? What could have gone better? And next week, on the back of learning that and knowing something, as I said to you all along, you either win or you learn. So on the back of learning that, what I'm going to do differently? So what will stop me moving something over on the list to the following week? And that's the main thing, really. You've got to be disciplined about it. Self-discipline is really important, and procrastination is an easy way of putting things off. But if you're organized and you've got a list and you look at the list, I'd say a minimum of once a week. Most people who are really successful will do it every day. And if you've got that list of what you can do, then those are the things each day. You're giving yourself a little pat on the back. If you've done something, so you haven't eaten that Mars bar, you've gone for that extra 5K run that you didn't think you were going to do. And just those little victories are what will make a big difference to you in projecting you towards that main goal.
Do you know what? I love a list. And it's quite funny, actually. We've just gone through, our business is going to be 14 years old from when I started it this year. And we were clearing out some old files and stuff a couple of weeks ago, and I found my original hit list of our targets of what we were going to do with this business and who we were going to be working with. And out of the five people we had on the hit list of who I wanted to be working with, we'd worked with three of them, and we still work with two of them. And that's 14 years ago. So I've kept the list. I can't throw the list away. I feel like I've threw it away and it'll crumble. So no, I get that. I completely get that.
There's loads of evidence and scientific and research around people making New Year's resolutions. And the people who write them down are the ones who are going to keep them. People who just think of something, say it, and tell their friends they're going to do it, it'll just fall apart. It won't happen within 2 weeks of it. It's gone. But if you write it down, a couple of things with it. One is you're reinforcing the determination to do it. you're more likely to do something with it and you write it down, especially if you go back and look at it and review it. You don't have to physically write it down. Of course, you can do it now in planners where you have it with you all the time. For example, you can have it on your computer. It'll all be replicated on your smartphone, replicated on your tablet. So wherever you go, whatever time of the day suits you best to review it, you've got it in front of you. And that's the key. I think that's vital if you want to get things achieved.
No, I couldn't agree more. Now, that obviously helps, I guess, towards the long-term planning as well, because if you've got that, you know, that 12-month plan or that 2-year plan or the 3-year plan, or I think Molly even mentioned like a 5-year plan, obviously she and I spoke about how fluid that can be and how flexible it can be and, you know, how different paths can be taken. But if you've got a plan in place, whether it's to be in a championship, in a car, or at a certain level, or you know, within a second, a kilometer to a rival, or wherever it may be, that's where you need to be going next, I'm guessing.
Yeah, well, you know, it's totally flexible. You've got to have a structure, and it's only a template, remember. It's something, if it's not realistic and you find it's not working out, just change it. You know, it's not set in stone by any means. And Molly, when I started working with her in 2008, we put together a 10-year plan. You know, and what I got her to do was visualize that and tell me what the 10-year plan would look like. In other words, put yourself 10 years ahead, describe to me where you are, what you're doing. And, of course, 10 years on or very close to it, it's different to what you envisaged. And that's fine because, as I say, if you're reviewing it every week, then you've got that flexibility and you can move it as you need to. But if you don't do it, you ain't going to aim there. If you don't aim there, you ain't going to have the momentum towards it. It's exactly that.
So for the aspiring driver, as much as, I suppose, the career driver, this is ground zero. You know, if somebody's following this, and you know, we've had plenty of people contact us, this is the point where, you know, perhaps is this where they start looking at, well, 2019, this is where I want to be? Or, you know, is it, again, does it start today? Does it start next year? When would you start?
Well, it's a line in the sand. It can start anytime you want. You know, if you go back and look at what we've done so far, so you look at what we do and why we rally. What do you want to achieve? The long term goal. What's stopping you? What's holding you back in that? Is it true or is it false? You know, or money things we talked about. Where are you now? That's basically the reality. And be honest with yourself where you are now. What knowledge, skills, attitudes do you need to achieve it? How much will it cost you and what are you willing to sacrifice along the way? Then break it down. When you've done all of that, that's the only time. And so at that point, you can break it down into the milestones. And once you've got those milestones listed, then you have a structure where you need to go. And, you know, if you go a week later, which is what we'll touch on next week, if you find that you've done this great list, if you've made your goals and you've done your list and you look at it a week later and nothing's happened, then that's what we need to look at. And we'll come back to that one next week, is why have you not done it? And what are the reasons around that? What could be holding you back? Is it facts or assumptions that are holding you back?
I'm actually quite excited for next week's now.
Yeah,
I've been excited for every week, but I'm actually quite excited because it's like it's the culmination now. We are kind of getting to the end of the journey, so it's actually quite exciting. So we'll be back next week with what's the syllabus called next week? I keep on calling it a syllabus because I know you don't like it being called a syllabus. So what's it next week?
Next week we'll be talking about what's holding you back, or what could be holding you back. In other words, why have you not done it? And we'll go back to the same thing. Is it based on facts or is it based on assumptions? So are you based on reality or are you just saying, well, I can't do it. I've had to think about it and I've tried to do it and it's not working. So it's just really a reality check. And some people will fall down really quickly on it. So it's just a matter of going back and saying, right, okay, let's have a look at it and see. I guess all of this, as we've mentioned before, is on the blog on stagebystage.com. If anybody wants to go and have a look on there, you've probably got a better structure. You've got some extra materials on there we can't do in 10, 15 minutes on these segments. But yeah, we had a lot of feedback from that as well. And I encourage people, if you are interested in it, it's probably a good resource to go and have a look at as well, as you've seen.
Happy days. There you go, folks. Well, we will be back next week. Trev will be back with us next week. Jack will be back with us next week. Ryan Champion, DJ Ryan Champion, will be back for my Ibiza next week, so he'll be with us. Keep spreading the love, folks. As I say, it is our first episode back of season 12. We're going to keep plowing them out. we've had a tough start to the year. Obviously, I keep on talking about Run Run Livery. We are talking to some people at the moment. If you can get involved, if you can support us, you can get in contact with us at studio at absoluterally.co.uk. Previous episodes, of course, are available on absoluterally.co.uk. You can get in contact with us via Twitter, which is absolute_rally, and of course via the Facebook page, facebook.com/absoluterally. We will be back, folks, same time in your little podcast hole, this time next week.